And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and Jake McClure.
I just thought I'd change up the music on.
Yeah, well, this is a little more lively music for January 17th, don't you think? I mean, the sun is shining outside, and
you're making changes. That's progressive.
Well, change is
good. It's a
little
scary.
Change is good, I think.
Unless it's bad.
Well,
changing from a 30,000 foot altitude to a 10-foot altitude in a very short period of time is probably not a good change.
Actually, it's what's called landing a jet airliner.
It just depends on the rate of change.
Yeah.
I'm comfortable with
We're still playing bagpipes. It's not like
the rate of change is the issue here.
I didn't switch to Mozart or something. You know,
that would have been going back. I think the conservatives in our group might actually think that was, bagpipes are around the same time.
Buddy Holly would be even a greater change from bagpipes.
That's true. Yeah. We can't get that progressive.
So, but you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. And if today where you are is January 17th, 2015, then you can give us a call in here at 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
We might as well.
Don't know if anyone's listening.
Well,
probably not.
You are.
That's a large assumption. Very large.
Well, I've said that about you on several occasions, that you are a large assumption, but that's beside the point. We probably ought to say something about the fact that
the stock market?
The standard, the Dow Jones Industrial Average.
The standard Dow Industrial 500.
No. The Dow Jones Industrials, which is 30 stocks.
Right.
Which is a widely...
An index of 30 stocks.
It's an index of 30 stocks widely followed by the Moose Media.
Yes.
Was down 1.27% for the week. Year-to-date, down 1.75%. And it's
Friday, it was up 1.1%.
1.3.
Well, I'm looking at it. It's 190 points. It's 1.1% for Friday.
Well, I'll take your word for it. No, it's 1.3 down, and it's 1.1 up.
Right.
And, yeah. Anyway,
so
but
if it had done another 1.1, it would only be down a very small amount.
But for the week, okay, the Dow was down, and this is a weekly show. It's a weaker weekly show.
Very weak.
It was down 1.27%. Year-to-date, down 1.75%, which should tell you something. Now, more importantly...
What should it tell us? Is that basically we're flat for the year. We're a little bit down.
Yeah. And the other thing that's important...
Our long 17-day
to
year.
Be very much aware of, because, again, people are... I'm still hearing noises to the effect that why is my total portfolio not up double digits? Well, let me give you the 52-week returns of the Dow Jones Industrial Average and the S&P 500.
There are
52-week, in other words, had you invested hypothetically in something you couldn't invest in 1 year, why is this important? It's a measurement, okay.
Yeah.
6.4% rise in 52 weeks in the
one
Dow.
One year, 6.2%.
9.63%. I'd look closer to see it on the S&P 500. And let me explain why it's important that you really get a handle on that. I just published a newsletter, we published a newsletter, I should say. And in the newsletter, we gave a warning about the fact that at the end of last year, if you looked at the returns in the various asset classes and indices and indexes and whatever, indicia, whatever you want to call that stuff, the S&P 500 and the Dow were both up double digits for the year. But when you go down the list of other asset classes, the mid-cap level asset classes and the international, and you look at everything else, they were much, 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 much lower return for the year. In other words, it is very important if you are a serious investor and you're trying to measure your portfolio's performance that you don't pay a lot of attention, excessive attention, to the Dow and the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ and things like that. Those are the ones that are reported in the media. They're also the places where there are big index funds that drive the price of those indexes or indices, if you want to be properly correct.
They're at the very least a significant force in driving them around.
And we are already at the point where a lot of people have forgotten the lesson of the late 1990s when the other aspects of the market, for instance, the various value indexes, rose in the late 1990s, but not by a great deal. They rose at a much more moderate, stable rate, while the S&P 500 and the Dow shot up at double-digit rates for about 3 years. And remember what happened after that. And by the way, there's no way of forecasting when a dip in the Dow, I like that term, or a dip in the S&P 500 will turn into a massive sell-off. There's no way you can forecast that. A lot of people have tried, and a lot of people have gone broke trying. It's almost as bad as the currency traders got beat up this last week. But I'm going to talk about that.
Yeah,
that
was we've got more to talk about. Swiss franc.
By the way, that was a double whammy. But the point I want to make is, in the newsletter I said, when you have the large cap indices, and particularly when they're driven by large growth, rising much faster than the rest of the market, it's really important to remember that these guys give back that return as fast as they get it, and there is nobody who has ever been successful at predicting, at being able to capture the upside and miss the downside. And it looks like it'd be so simple. I mean, you look at history, you look at the history of the markets, and it looked like it'd be so simple just to be invested on the upside, to use the Will Rogers, buy a stock, if it goes up, sell it, if it goes down, don't buy in the first place. Several people tried that back in the 1990s, and they went to prison. But hedge fund managers have been trying that and going to prison. But the point is that it's really important to not get greedy. And we're right about the point. I realize the market's down a little bit now, and there's a lot of fear and loathing and scaredness, which, by the way, means we're in a bull market. You're going to see we're out of the recovery and into the expansion now. And the International Monetary Fund backed me up on that this week. They came out with an announcement that the percentage of unemployment versus employment and so on, the employment numbers around the world are back to where they were in 2007, the percentages.
Mm-hmm.
So we are on a global level out of the slump and back to a stable position. Well, let me tell you what follows next. It'd be nice if we could just kind of move along as earnings rose, the market would rise, and everybody will be happy, and nothing will get overpriced. We've come from a period of from 2009 through the end of last year of underpriced market coming back up to its normal value, historic valuation. The next leg in the, quote, expansion will indeed probably be some degree of rationality followed by excesses on the upside. And the excesses on the upside of the market, where you will see that in the S&P 500 index funds, in the S&P 500, because the Dow is part of the S&P 500, really, because all 30 stocks in the Dow are in the S&P 500. And so what you're going to see is large cap indexes outrunning the rest of the market. My advice to people is don't go with them, because when they fall so amazingly unexpectedly, because there's no economic issue that makes them fall. It's they've reached the point of absolute instability, and nobody knows when that is. So that's just a little word of wisdom from here, and I guess we can move from there into the Swiss Central Bank decision to unpeg the franc from the euro.
Right.
Boy, does that sound esoteric.
All right. So Switzerland, in its very nature, is neutral. They will never join the European Union. They will never join Germany or any other country because they're neutral. That is the bedrock of their society.
It's sort of the essence of net neutrality.
Right. They have, until very recently, pegged their franc to the euro. They've said 1.20 is the exchange rate. So
1.1 to 1.2.
Right. Right. And this is it should be a non-event. It should be not a big deal. except that the reason why they unpegged their franc from the euro is because they're afraid of euro weakness. They're afraid that the stability of Switzerland is going to be affected by the stability of the European Union. And when you're talking about buying back bonds, or when, you know, the quantitative easing, that sort of thing, this had the Swiss very worried, because they don't want to see huge shifts in the euro, because they have to buy euros when that happens, so that they can float their franc above it. And that's going to be very expensive going forward.
Mm-hmm.
So you have something to say about this. I've got some perspective to add afterwards, I think.
It's interesting, because shortly before all this occurred, in the last month or so, several people have approached me in grocery stores and so on, which, by the way, is a bad signal, about currency trading, which we don't do.
Right.
Let me tell you what happened to a lot of people who are doing currency trading. The people who, and apparently a lot of people had made this bet, and you can, on the currency markets, what they call mom and pop, or individual retail investors, which really aren't investors or speculators, can do currency trades in the United States. And the Dodd-Frank bill put the currency traders under the Commodities Futures Trading Exchange regulation, which is a good thing. Initially, the exchange limited the leverage for a currency trade to 10 to 1. Boy, is this classic. The CEOs of these firms all got together, and particularly FXCM, which is the biggest one in the United States, first one and biggest retail currency trader in the United States, just screamed and wrote letters and wrote their congressman and got the exchange, the commodities, the futures exchange, to allow them to trade 50 to 1. In other words, for every dollar that you put in to of your money in there, you can borrow $49 of money to make bets on currencies. 50 to 1 leverage. And we've been running along with 50 to 1 leverage now for several years. And everybody, because that's where they were before. And so if you were bet, there's a story in the Wall Street Journal about a guy who had a few hundred dollars in FXCM. And he had a...
And FXCM is what?
Which is the biggest U.S. retail foreign exchange broker.
Okay.
And it's called FX Trades.
Right.
And he went from having a $10 gain on his bet that the euro would rise against the franc, because that's considered, by the way, a very safe entry level, because the franc was pegged
right. No
more than a 10% move, okay?
Right.
He woke up and he opened up his computer and he logged on and he saw that he owed $5,000 to the exchange.
Ouch.
Yes. And he didn't have $5,000 laying around. And he's still, by the way, he's still in the position where he owes that money to the exchange, and he's in a world of hurt. Here's the problem. A lot of people in the smaller companies, see, FXCX survived because it got loaned like $300 million
right.
as an emergency to keep it open.
There are a lot of currency traders that just went under.
Yeah, and this is the point. If they went under and you were trading with them, you were using this brokerage firm to trade currencies,
mm-hmm.
and you got hit by that, they aren't insured. Your money is gone. But
right.
B, the bankruptcy, if you owed them money after their failure, which in most cases that's what's going to happen.
Right. You still owe them money.
You still owe them money. But, and it gets worse, if you made big money because you anticipated this, you were really, really smart, you don't get it.
Yeah, you've got to get in line behind all the other creditors.
And the other creditors generally have better bankruptcy attorneys than you
right.
do. So you're just not going to get your money.
Oh, I said earlier this should have been a non-event. It should have are dangerous words when we come to currency trading.
You have to watch about shooting all over yourself.
Yes, don't shoot all over yourself. Switzerland has a GDP of about $650 billion, U.S. dollars, 650. That's nice. You hear that number and you go, oh, that's very nice. That $650 billion, if I had that, what could I do? Texas has, same year, 2013, a GDP of $1.4 trillion.
Mm-hmm.
well more than double the GDP of Switzerland.
If you're saying that if Texas unpegged its currency
to the dollar,
the euro.
Against the euro. Yeah, if we did it from the dollar, there would be a lot of weakness.
Yeah, but we can't against the dollar.
No, we can't.
But we can against the euro.
Right.
All we would need is our own currency.
Basically, the equivalent of, I'm trying to think of a state that is close to 650. There are so many states.
Maryland?
Could be. Maryland. If Maryland decided to have its own currency, it would cause shakiness because of two things. One, Maryland's no longer part of the dollar group. Okay, that would cause people to go, "Oh, right. That's really strange. What do you buy things with in Maryland?" So that's a problem. Second, it would cause lack of trust in the dollar,
mm-hmm.
and that's really what hit the euro, because the Swiss are famous for their monetary policies.
We actually did that one time,
and chocolate, and
the Confederate states unpegged.
Oh, well, there were a lot more of. During that time period,
there were
five different currencies in the 1830s.
But there was still the U.S. dollar, and everybody else had their own separate
kind of
currencies.
But
the point is that we tried that. It really didn't work out well. There were several million dead people thereafter.
Right, and that's one of the things that is important is that, you know, if Puerto Rico decides to go off the dollar or Iran stops buying oil with dollars, it doesn't affect us because we haven't made a deal with them. They haven't set their stability to us.
Actually,
they don't have a history of acting rationally.
If the Puerto Ricans went off the dollar, it would have a negative effect because there's a lot of money owed in Puerto Rico to American banks and their local currency.
The citizens would not do well.
The local currency would collapse and they wouldn't be able to pay back their loans.
Correct. That would be a problem.
Which is, by the way, what's
happening
going on in Russia.
In Russia, yes. There's a lot of
Venezuela.
A lot of debt owed to the United States in banks by private citizens.
Well, let me tell you what the fear is and why the market went down.
Let's do that. Yeah.
The euro dropped to 115 against the dollar shortly after the Swiss unpegged. Boy, does that sound esoteric.
Unpegging Swiss.
The Swiss unpegged. And why did the Swiss unpeg? Two reasons. One, it is strongly suspected, because the Swiss will not deny it at this point, that the European Central Bank contacted the Swiss Central Bank and said, we are going to go to use quantitative easing, which is going to drop the value of the euro like a rock. And the Swiss looked around and said, you know, the only way we're keeping this pegged 1.1 to 1.2 against the euro is by buying euros. And if the euro drops like a rock, it's going to cost us a lot of money. So they backed out. The other thing is the Greeks look very strongly like they're about to elect an anti-euro government.
Yes. Call them euroskeptic. Which, but if you look at that closely, it looks like euroseptic.
And yeah,
they mean the same thing.
If they pull the plug on the European Union, the follow-on effect could be that a lot of other countries pull the plug on the European Union.
I don't think they will.
But the fear is there.
At this point, if Greece leaves, the European Union's pretty well set for it. They're okay.
A lot of people apparently, and this was a little bit of a surprise to me, were hanging on to euros, which, by the way, is when it comes to currency, I don't know if you knew this or not, when you talk actual bills and coins, has a larger circulation than the dollar.
Right.
But not in electronic dollars, of course. But
in electronic.
So the point is that the Swiss hanging on to their peg gave apparently a lot of people around the world trust in the euro. And when the Swiss unpegged...
Yeah, if you think about...
It's basically the ship isn't sinking because the Swiss boat is tied to it. And as long as the Swiss are really cool and they're tied to the boat, it's not sinking.
Well, here's the problem with that. And the Swiss are famous for their conservative approach to monetary policy, and it's great. But when they left, it wasn't because they don't trust the euro. And that was made very clear. They just recognized that it would be just too expensive during this moment of volatility to stay pegged to the euro.
But then there's another issue.
That's going to hurt them as well. Because
when the euro dropped,
they get a lot of money from tourism.
Oddly enough, the ruble, which is more tied to the euro than it is to the dollar by a long shot, really started falling again. And as it started falling again, their dollar-denominated debt in Russia looks more and more like it's going to be unpayable.
Astronomically large, because the conversion rate. I mean, if you had a $100,000 mortgage and you owed it to the United States, say J.P. Morgan Chase, you own a house in Moscow, you have a $100,000 mortgage, you are paying it back every month in rubles, and the ruble has dropped 60%. So now you've got more than double. You've got 120% mortgage payment to make every month.
And this is, this gets more and more complicated. To give you some idea what $1.15 euro and falling means, when the last time I was over in that area, in that part of the world, several years ago, we visited Ireland, which was on the euro, it was $1.60. It's now down to $1.15. It opened, the euro opened against the U.S. dollar at 1.18.
All right. It's right back to very close
so
to the open.
It's actually below where it started, and the key issue is it's falling. If, as is widely expected at this point, the European Central Bank begins to pour money into Europe to try to get it out of its deflation and recession, the euro will drop further. That's just one of those realities of life. And when it drops further, let me simply say,
debts are easier to pay. There are some good things that come out of this.
Right.
Here. Now, let me say the good things, because we've been talking about the bad things. There's the good things.
Mm-hmm.
With the euro as low as it is,
it'd be really a nice time to take a vacation in Europe.
Absolutely. You go to Europe.
Dollars will buy lots of stuff.
Right. You can buy lots of stuff. And that means that even if you're not taking a vacation, say you want to buy some French snails. There you go. And you get them shipped over. They're a lot less expensive than they used to be.
You can ship snails from France?
Very slowly. You do it by snail mail. Couldn't help myself.
Oh, boy.
So you get your snails in the mail at a much lower price.
I don't think you can actually buy. Can you? I guess you could buy canned snails.
I suppose you could buy canned snails. I have not tried that. They come with their own can, I've noticed.
Yeah, but I don't think you can buy live snails. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, okay. So exports, if you're in Europe and you're trying to sell to the rest of the world, your product just became more affordable. It's like going on sale. The Chinese now will be able to buy German products for a lot less than they did before. We will be able to buy German products for a lot less than we did before. And if you think about Mercedes and BMW, those prices are going to come down next year.
Yeah, I don't think there's a large percentage of Americans who buy Mercedes and BMWs.
But a larger percentage than before if the prices come down. And that's a key.
That's for the 51% of students who
right,
are on
the, right.
the free
so
lunch
like,
program.
Look, okay, so this concept of their one of the things that brought us out of our recession so quickly is our dollar fell, and it made our exports go up. Because people could buy things from us.
But
now the other way is we're going to have trouble exporting.
Well, this is why I'm saying that our market is declining in the face of this, despite its irrational declination in this case. I love that.
There you go.
Because the United States economy is humming. And that's why the market, by the way, went up on Friday is they were reminded that the United States economy is doing very, very well.
Low unemployment.
But for instance, you would think, okay, well, the price of oil is down, which means oil companies are making less profit. That would take
for everybody else, we get more profit.
But we'd have more money in our pockets, so we're going to spend more money. But then somebody said, whoa, 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 wait a minute. There's a tremendous amount of money invested, particularly on the East and West Coast, in hotel chains and so on, that cater to Europeans, because since the Great Recession, the Europeans have seen the low dollar, high euro,
right,
meaning that they could come over here and be rich on a median income. Well, guess what? They are probably not going to be coming over here and spending a lot of money in the near future because, A, they're in a recession, and, B, stuff over here got a lot more expensive for them.
Right.
By the way, the yacht business is in trouble.
Oh, yeah. The yacht business, well, the Russians were driving the yacht business.
Yeah, Russians were driving yachts.
Yes, they were.
It used to be the Indonesians who draw the yachts or whatever.
The high-rise condominiums in Manhattan are also in trouble because it's the Russians that were coming in, and basically
they
were coming in and they were buying up real estate in New York, and they were buying yachts basically as a piece of real property.
Status symbol.
Well, as a status symbol, but also as a way to make sure that their values stayed up.
And because the yachts are valued in dollars, they have made a killing. Except for the fact there's nobody to buy the yachts, so the price of yachts are falling.
Yeah,
so
this is the problem with commodities. Yeah, they bought high-rise condominiums in Manhattan because the prices were going up.
Because
the Russians were buying high-rise condominiums in Manhattan, and they go, okay, the ruble has fallen. Now we can sell our high-rise condominium in Manhattan.
Except
and
there's no buyers.
There's no buyers because the Russians aren't buying.
And we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Are you a Russian? Hello?
Caller.
Hello?
Oh, there you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach.
Hello?
Hello? I suppose you
can you hear me?
Hear us now?
Now I can hear you.
Oh, right. Okay. Somebody
are you a Russian?
No, I'm just a Russian to get an answer.
Okay, good. You may ask your question now.
Okay. First of all, thank you for taking my call, gentlemen. I have a question for you. It's about precious metals, and it's not because is it a good investment. I know your opinions on it. Jake, you gave me and my wife a very good 10-minute sketch on the, particularly the silver market. My interest isn't personal. It has other reasons I'm interested. Looking at the Kitco price, I know they throw a figure out there of $50 silver and $2,000 gold. Looking at the Kitco price, silver would have to rise like 288% to hit $50.
Yes.
Yep.
What would it take for something like that to be a reality? I don't think it would be good if something like that happened for silver to rise.
I can't even imagine.
What would have to happen?
Well, there are things that we as humans do that really don't make sense if you look at it from the outside. One of the things that we do regularly is we try to find patterns where nothing exists as a pattern. We have, throughout history, there's been a ratio of gold to silver. And that has been roughly steady. So we look at that roughly steady ratio and we go, oh, well, this must mean that gold and silver have a relationship.
Well, they do on the atomic tables.
On the atomic tables,
sort of. That's the only place.
But they really don't. There is no reason why we shouldn't find a huge amount of gold or a huge amount of silver separate. And it happens throughout history. So what would it take to get silver to come up to 50 times its value right now? Is that the question?
Yeah, well, it would have to rise 288%.
Okay, 288%. So triple.
Friday.
It would need to triple in price to get up there. What would it take? It would take the outlawing of the technology that mines for silver. And even then, the black market would show up. Because part of the reason why the price of gold and silver is where it is because technology has increased. One of the programs that I really, really have enjoyed watching, I watched 3 seasons of it, and I watched it for different reasons than most people. There was a series on Discovery Channel called Gold Rush, and it was about a bunch of people that did other things for a living back when the gold was booming. They did other things for a living, and they looked around, and they said, let's go to Alaska. So they invested some money, and they bought some equipment that really was not the right equipment to buy, and they headed up to a lease that they'd seen that they'd gotten without seeing it, showed up. The lease had been taken by somebody else, so they went to another place last minute, again, without seeing it, and started mining for gold. And they broke even or very close to it on the first year. So you have absolute amateurs using antiquated and broken equipment coming into an area and making a living or very close to it doing it. That's not reasonable. If anybody can do it, then anybody will do it, and that will keep the price down. If you've got new equipment, the price of gold has a cap. We know where gold is that's more expensive. It's just like oil. For some period of time, that price can stay high until the technology increases so that anybody can get it. And if you watch that gold rush, same is true with silver. It's different technologies, but it's true. They were using old equipment to wash rocks to get the oil off of it, and it's not like really advanced equipment. It's just shooting high-pressure water onto rocks as it rolls over a conveyor belt. And then catching the little powder as it falls off. This is not rocket surgery.
Did you say they were washing the oil off of it?
The gold.
There's
they
a
were
difference.
Washing the gold off of it. They wash oil off of birds and gold off of rocks.
Yeah, but you said they were washing oil.
Oh, I'm sorry. I used the wrong word. So this concept.
Well, oil and gold are similar.
Why is it that the price of gold came back down? Why is it that the price of oil dropped? Well, the price of oil dropped for the same reason. Technology had increased so that just about anybody in the United States, and I have done valuations on oil wells, and I can see who's drilling and who's not, and some of them are very professional, and some of them are rank amateurs.
Antiquated equipment from the 19th century.
And did something else before they did this, and they came in, and they were still able to make a profit. That's a cap. There's a price cap that has to do with technology. And with silver, it would have to be a large company or a large country, lots of large countries, suddenly deciding to buy silver.
The main reason, at least, that the price of gold and silver, mainly gold, went up recently, substantially, turns out it has nothing to do with what is advertised.
Correct.
It has to do with the fact that the Indians in India,
and Chinese.
In India, and to a lesser degree the Chinese, wanted to secure their wealth in something other than the government.
Very similar to Russians with skyscrapers.
And there's another nice little article came out that said that the price of gold is going to be affected by this, but we don't know exactly how. And that is the growth in the Indian economy is now faster than the growth in the Chinese economy. And as a result, the Indian economy is right on the verge of overtaking the Chinese in terms of size of their economy. Now, does that mean they're going to buy more gold or they're going to start trusting their banks? Well, if they decide to buy more gold, which would run the price of gold up, then their economy will collapse, which means that they will sell the gold, which will run the price of gold down. If they decide to start having stable banks and trust them, that will run the price of gold down as people will begin to pull it off out of their jewelry and put it in the bank.
But by total size, I'm trying to figure out where you're coming from.
I just read an article today that said that the Indian economy, in terms of dollar growth per year.
Oh, dollar growth per year.
I mean, rate of growth per year, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
We're overtaking and about to pass the Chinese, not in percentage growth necessarily.
Yeah, because they're a 1.8, 1.9 trillion GDP, and the Chinese are 10 times
but
that.
But basically, the Chinese growth is slowing and the Indian growth is speeding up. Well, you know, bottom line to it is if the Chinese start to slow down,
the Indians are going to catch up.
Then the Chinese will start selling their gold. Because they'll need the money. And so it's a very complex equation out there. What would cause silver to rise in value that far?
Silver's not as commonly purchased as gold for that reason.
Right now, very frankly, silver is far more of a commercial commodity.
Yeah.
And the price of copper, which is the leading commercial commodity, is falling. And we're in a cycle that looks like, for instance, if the European Union slows down, if the Russians slow down, like I don't think they can do anything else, and the Chinese slow down. By the way, the definition of slowness in China is growing not quite so fast.
Right.
But all of these would tend to push commodity prices down. Silver would probably go with them. And again, over the long term, we said this before, say it again, gold prices over the very, very long term have been in a downward movement since the 1600s. I don't think we're going to see any real change in that.
Right. Yeah, I agree with that. The concept of what we peg prices to, the first market cycle that we have documented, there's a good book on this. It's called The Personal Wealth Coach, and it was written by Jeff McClure.
Doggone, I ought to read that book sometime.
Yeah, it's written quite a long time ago. You need to read another or write another
one.
It's
not even in electronic format.
Right.
So.
It talked about the corn-hog cycle, and corn was actually barley, and hogs are the pigs. And this was a well-regulated, very easy to see. You could look at the pattern throughout history, and you
Shrine.
Could say, look at this. It's so obvious. All you have to do is buy one when the other one's up and then wait a couple of years and sell it and buy the other one. and you would consistently make money. And that happened until the railroad came around. And so that lasted millennia. But a railroad comes in and brings cattle with it, because the reason why corn and hogs were so interlinked is because they could be grown close or relatively close to a city without a whole lot of space being taken up. And cattle had to have lots more room. Well, as soon as we could transport the cattle to the city, the corn hog cycle died.
It was disrupted.
I mean, there's still some correlation, but it's nowhere near the beauty of this that it used to be.
Right, and it's a very complex thing now, and it sometimes goes off and does weird things.
Right, and that the same is true with gold, silver, and this. The reality is, however, that tomorrow silver could go up 280%.
Or it could go down 280%.
Right.
Now, it can't go down 280%.
So what could cause that?
It could
cause silly rumors. Glenn Beck. Part of the rise.
He's a little bit discredited
right,
at this point.
At this point, he's not going to be moving the price of gold. But Glenn Beck's radio advertisements were measurable.
And television.
Had a measurable impact on the price of gold and silver. When they would run these advertisements in a month and then not in another month, you could see a correlation to the amount of advertisement. So a lot of it could, I mean, if any new technology starts using silver, there's going to be a higher demand. But
there's a lot of silver still in the ground.
This comes back to something that is important, very important. Commodities are simply
commodities.
They don't do anything unless you do something with them. So you shouldn't expect to make a profit unless you add value.
Yeah,
and gold looks very pretty. If you turn it into jewelry, you've added value. If you turn it into electronics, you've added value. You should expect to make a profit.
The ratio of retail investors in gold, silver, and currencies that make money are about the same, which is a very, very, very tiny slice of the total. In other words, there's only very, very, very few. I've never actually met any, by the way, retail investors who make money in currency trading or commodity trading.
But
however,
there are sharks. It's kind of like playing poker in Vegas.
The companies that do the commodity trading and make the advertisements are consistently very profitable until they go broke.
Right. If you think about playing poker in a World Series in Vegas, there's only one winner.
Okay. That makes sense?
Yeah, a lot of it. So I guess realistically, the only way you could see a dramatic increase with that without some catastrophic event is if some new technology came along that suddenly had a great demand for silver.
Right.
That suddenly that would do it without causing a cataclysmic event.
Actually, if silver went up that much, the new technology would find an alternative metal.
Right. Or we would find better ways of getting silver out of the ground.
Yeah, because Silverton, for example, in Colorado, it's called Silverton because there's tons of silver under the ground.
It's just more expensive to get out than the price of silver is today.
It's kind of like oil was until the price went up.
Like shale.
We had more oil underground in the United States than any other nation in the world, but it was just too expensive to get out until the price went up, and then somebody found a technology to get it out economically, and then the price collapsed. So that's the story of all commodities, okay?
Well, let me give you a quick plug on your book on that. I've read it. I like it. I particularly like the story of Anjan Court. I didn't realize. I knew about the battle and about flipping the bird and all that coming from it, but I didn't know how it was actually a catalyst for creating a middle class. That was a very interesting take on that story. So it is a very good book.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
I think I'll write
it again.
There you go. And like I say, you might, as an interesting show sometime, I know what you're, Jake, you kind of gave me some education on things that I didn't know. There's a lot of fees you pointed out to me in the commodities that I didn't know they were there, and I'm sure a lot of other people didn't know, things like assaying fees and transportation fees and storage fees and purity bonds and like that go with them precious metals that I'd never heard of until you pointed them out to me.
You know that the story behind that is that the Jack and the Beanstalk.
Oh, yeah. Magic beans.
Yeah, the giant is the company. And he says, fee, fi, fo, fum, I smell the blood of a sucker, come.
Well, thanks for the call. We've got to play some commercials. Really appreciate
it. Thanks again. Appreciate the info. Bye.
Take care.
Bye-bye. And you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and we are going to play some commercials, so that Town Square Media and KTM can stay on the air. And we'll be back on the other side, Lord willing, with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. We've got about 10 minutes left in the program today. However, we will be back, Lord willing, next week. Just thought I'd say that.
Yeah, it's kind of nice to know.
So I think if you could wait a week, then it'd be cool. Telephone number's in here, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
There's a bunch of stuff still that we could be talking about.
I think we should just play the quiet game.
We could, but I don't know that that would work real well. Anyway, inflation is down. The United States economy is up and growing. We have a lot of momentum in the economy still. I won't go through all the numbers, but suffice to say that the people who make the lead moves in investing in things that ultimately produce income and jobs and so on down the road are doing it because they're seeing the orders coming in. The United States economy is still in really good shape. The consensus out there now is about a 3% GDP growth next year, which is lower than the 3.4 that was being guessed at before, but still in really good shape. The European economy is not in great shape, but it looks like the European Central Bank is about to take some stimulative action that could turn things around, which I'm really happy about. There's still a lot of risks out there in the world, but this is a really key thing I want to say. Even if the Russians, as Gorbachev, by the way, suggested last week, I don't know if you heard about that, he actually was interviewed.
There's a threat for nuclear destruction if we're not careful here.
He's sensing that inside the old Soviet Union, Russia, there is this combative attitude of if you keep putting pressure on us, we will attack you, and vice versa. Very frankly, I don't think it's going to get all that far, and I also think the issue is that if Russia tries it, they'll just hurt themselves really badly. The markets are going to be volatile. They're going to see a lot of up and down movement as we transition from this recovery, which was a slam dunk, into an expansion. But the bottom line to it is Russia is so small, Greece is so small, and all the other places that are causing ruckuses are so tiny compared with the United States that we're back to the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Mm-hmm.
This has been, since World War II, the more often than not situation is the United States was doing very, very well, and everybody else was on the trash heap.
Right. Yep.
So we're getting sort of back to normal. I hate to say that. And I am very optimistic about the next decade. Beyond that, it starts to get a little bit weird, to say the least. But I just want to kind of let the listener, anyone who happens to, all both of you that are listening,
yes,
know that it's really important to neither let greed nor fear drive your decisions about your long-term investments. I want to get one other thing out of the way here in my monologue here, and I'm going to turn it over to Jake. The single biggest differentiation in the United States right now between the half of the population that feels very good about themselves economically and is seeing a growing economic piece of the pie and the people that aren't is their investments in marketed securities. I didn't say annuities. I didn't say non-traded REITs. I said marketable securities. The single biggest difference between wealth and non-wealth, and it's growing with each passing year.
Mm-hmm.
Your ability to either approach that rationally and scientifically or find somebody who will do so for you is probably the biggest differentiator between how well off you will be 10 years from now and not.
This is earlier in the hour we talked about education and about how rational arguments were the things that people, even with college degrees, had a lot of trouble with. What we're emphasizing here is rationality. If you look at exactly what you were just talking about,
I am old
investments,
Bali, by the way.
Investments over a long period of time, be rational. Really look at it. Be judgmental. Hold it to the same standards. And I'm going to sound like I'm coming out of left field here for just a second. A paper was published this last week on graphene. Are you familiar with graphene?
I am familiar with graphene.
It is a one-atom thick sheet of graphite.
Carbon.
Carbon. And it has extraordinary electrical properties. We can do all kinds of things. We're going to be replacing all that we've done with silicon with graphene. But there was a discovery that came out. We've had a trouble in that we haven't been able to magnetize, get the magnetic effect on graphene. Well, we say if you just put the layer of graphene over without touching a sheet of magnetic material and put the magnet...
But they can't touch each other.
Well, there's ways you can make them touch each other. You just have to do it in a way that's very, very smooth. Well, we have that technology now.
Smooth touch.
Right. And basically, there's a new property. So why am I bringing that up? Because the journal that published this, the scientists that researched this, were held to a certain standard. The same standard that I can say that and people nod their heads and go, yes, that's very reasonable. The same standard is held to a different study that came out that says that 2014 was the warmest year on record. And there have been people who are not scientists that are saying, no, that's not true, or that's silly, or whatever. It's only hundredths of a degree. 1/100th of a degree difference doesn't make a big deal. What it's saying is that our planet is warming. And I've talked in the past about the neuroscience where rationality leaves the building. When you've got something that you're passionate about and it has something to do with politics or with religion or with even a sports team or a college, if you think about Sandusky and Pennsylvania and about the riots that were held because he was removed from his coachhood when he was found to be a pedophile.
He wasn't a pedophile.
Oh, yeah. Yes, definitely.
Was the head coach who was a pedophile?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's the one serving the 400-plus-year sentence.
Oh, yeah, right, okay. Right. Sandusky. I'm thinking about the other guy.
Right.
Okay.
So coming back to global warming, call it what you want, to dispute the fact is to dispute the same facts that were held to the same standard with graphene and magnets. What we do about it is disputable. That's something you can have a debate on and look reasonable. But I'm bringing this up because often we do the same kind of irrational judgment based on a passion when we're talking about investments. Or if we flip this political side, same study that showed that Republicans got irrational when asked about global warming, Democrats get irrational when talking about gun control. If you lessen gun control in a given area in the United States, it's been shown again and again in the data, gun crime drops. And yet, when Democrats are presented this material, they don't believe it, even though it's held to the same standard that they agree with over in the global warming area. So keep that in mind in your life, in all of our lives. We make irrational judgments based on passions. Find them, because you're putting yourself in danger every time you do that. If you're so passionate about something that you cannot accept fact as fact, you're putting yourself in danger. If you get passionate about finding facts, then
you'll lose a lot of friends.
You will lose a lot of friends, but suddenly you look at politics and you go, all right, let's find the truth that's somewhere in the middle, that, you know, Republicans have great ideas and Democrats have great ideas and Democrats have horrible ideas and Republicans have horrible ideas. In essence, we're people.
You are very much more optimistic than I am about this.
Right, but we get involved in these debates and we're talking about, and we make broad sweeping accusations that if somebody believes one thing, they've got to believe another thing because that's what Republicans believe or that's what Democrats believe. We're people. And we're at a point in our history where we have access to more information on an individual basis than has ever been available. I think it's time that we should start making our own decisions on on rationality rather than taking somebody else's opinion that is ranting about
some...
But the
issue that you really said earlier has a lot of effect on that.
What's that?
And the issue I brought up. 51% of students are in a free lunch program because they're from a low economic background.
Right.
Low economic background generally suggests that the people who parented those children are not at the top of the academic achievement curve.
Right. I propose that if we make every person that we possibly can a high quality person, give them the best education they have that they have the ability to maintain, give them skills, then the entire society is going to get better because of it.
But then we have the issue that 40% of the people who graduate from college can't reason.
Right. So we've got to make some changes. We've got to fix some things.
So we got a long ways to go, folks, but you happen to be in the nation that's on top of the heap and is the most rational.
And are making the decisions.
Yeah, and we don't like that because of a Democrat in the White House, but it's still true.
It's still true.
And this has been the Personal Wealth Coach, and if you'd like to contact us off the air, we have a voicemail at 947-1111, which has really live people that answer the phone during the week.
And you can also reach us by email at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com, and listen to podcasts. You can look at our ugly mugs. You can read about our philosophy. And if you want to contact us, there's a contact us
field. I think we need a warning message on our podcast, so.
What's that?
You know, excessive listening to hear can strangle your brain.
It may need medication immediately afterwards.
Yeah, like
until
next week.
Fair, balanced, your Fox News radio station in Central Texas. News Radio 1400 KTEM AM. Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.